Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Hello, everyone. It's Jen Sullivan. Welcome to Fat Mascara. It's Wednesday. We're going to do the news. And I'm going to be vulnerable real quick. I've been getting lots of great feedback on our guest co-hosts, but I was so nervous when this whole experiment started that we would just see all the listeners disappear, because I know you come for Jen and Jess's show, right? And so far, signals are you are still listening and loving to the podcast. And it makes me so happy. And you're also giving me lots of great feedback on these guest co-hosts. Let's not say you're telling me who you like and don't like. Let's just say you're telling me who you like and who you love. And all comments have been noted. What did one of our guests that came on recently, what did she say? I think it's your interest has been registered. How's that for a neutral registration comment there? I do hope that you're going to love today's guest co-host, Anita Bhagwandas. But before I tell you who she is there a discontinued beauty product you really miss? For me, it's Marc Jacobs Beauty Lipstick in Hey Stranger. You hear that? Whoever's working on the new Marc Jacobs line. But with all the products coming out, they just discontinue products all the time. You don't know. You can't find it anymore. Well, we have a fun little project going on during Jess's sabbatical. I'm going to have a little sleuth come in and help us find discontinued beauty products. And I'm not going to call them dupes, but the product that you can use now that most closely resembles the discontinued product. Her name's Erica Metzger. She has an industry newsletter called The Beauty Loop. It's mostly for people like me who write about beauty, also for beauty executives and PR people. So we talked and she's willing to do the homework for you. So here's what you can do. You can email me, DM me, leave me a voicemail with a product that's been discontinued that you love and you miss. And we're going to pick a bunch of those and try and find replacements. She's going to do all that work for you. The email is info@fatmascara.com. The DM, go over to Instagram, @fatmascara. Send us a direct message. The phone number here in the United States, +1 646-481-8182. Don't worry, we're not going to play these voicemails like we do with Raise the Wand, so you don't have to practice and make sure it sounds good. You can literally just pick up the phone and be like, hey, Jen, Smashbox, eyeshadow, and casting call. You don't even have to explain. I'll know what you mean. That's actually a discontinued eyeshadow. Remember those trios that Smashbox had? They were good. Maybe that's yours. I don't know. Call me, email me, DM me with the product name, no other explanation necessary, Erica will get to work, and then she's going to come on the show in a couple weeks, and we're going to do a little segment on this. Okay, enough of the housekeeping. Anita, if you've been listening to this, you're like, where's my show? Where's my voice? You are coming into the studio momentarily, but so you don't have to sit through your resume, I want to tell people who you are. Anita Bhagwandas is a British beauty editor, the author of the fabulous Substack newsletter, The Powder Room. I'll put that link in the episode recap with the links. You just go down to the episode description, links to her, her newsletter will be there, and also her book. So she's the author of Ugly, Giving Us Back Our Beauty Standards, which comes out in paperback in the United States on April 9th. I think it's out in paperback in the UK at the beginning of May. I'm actually holding the book right here, and I just noticed that Caroline Hirons did the blurb on the cover. I mean, could there be any better recommendation or endorsement for you to go get this book? It's really good. I freaking loved it. She unearthed anecdotes in beauty culture and history that I had never heard, which is kind of hard to do. And she manages to make her thesis, which is basically that the world needs to rethink the way it talks and thinks about beauty. She makes this thesis without making me feel like a jerk for loving beauty products and treatments and Botox and filler. You know I love a treatment. You know I love a needle. So you can dismantle the concept of ugly and pretty. And she also talks about diet culture and a culture that makes people scared to look older while still loving the joy that beauty can bring. Because you've probably noticed over the years how I struggle with that dissonance. Like, I love perfume. I love makeup. I love the people that make brands. I love the packaging. But of course, I don't love the patriarchal colonialist history of beauty. Don't love the racism that still persists, the excessive consumerism. Okay, enough of my rant. She just writes in a really smart way that doesn't make you feel weird for loving, loving, loving beauty culture like you know I do, Jess does, and all of you listening do. So that struggle is tough, but she knows how to handle it. And that's why I'm going to shut up and let her do some talking. Let's all welcome Anita to Fat Mascara. Anita, welcome to Fat Mascara. Welcome to our virtual studio. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. This is very exciting.
It's very exciting for me too, because I feel like when you launched your Substack Powder Room, I started reading it. Then I found your book and I was like, did I find my UK counterpart?
I mean, I used to have the same hair as you until a few weeks ago as well, which is hilarious.
Did you have you had a gray streak?
Well, it's sort of like I've always had like a blonde streak through the front, and I just got bored of it the other day and dyed it. But I know I've had it for like 20 years.
Is it a natural streak or is it like a sun in or like bleach it or what do you do?
It's very bleached. I used to do it myself when I was a teenager and I've always just kept it. And now I obviously get it done professionally, but yeah.
Wait, what inspired the hair color change?
I don't know. I've got ADHD, so I'm quite impulsive. So I was just like, yeah, sure. Let's do that. I was going to dye it green or something. And then I was like, no, I'm just going to, let's just stick to black.
Subtle impulse.
Yeah.
If it comes to bangs, call me so we can talk through it.
Okay. Yeah. I don't have enough hair for that. I've got very fine hair, sadly. I wish.
Oh, bangs are always like, you know, you have that friend, they have the breakup. And then all of a sudden it's like, you shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, you've got a year of growing that out as well as the torment of your heartbreak.
Yes, I used to work at a teen magazine. Anita, one time a writer wrote in that she didn't like her bangs anymore, so she had cut them off. And I was like, honey, you just set yourself back another 6 months. She thought like, oh, I'll just cut them away. So then she like, what?
I can kind of see the logic of that, you know, when you have those dolls and like you sort of cut their hair and it keeps growing, but doesn't quite work on humans, sadly.
It doesn't. Well, I'm so glad you're here. Like I said, you're a beauty editor like me, but you kind of do all the things. You have this newsletter. You wrote a book. I've never written a book. So hands down to you. You seem to love a psychology study as much as me as I was going through your book. I was like, yes, footnotes. Yes.
I do. Yes. Yeah, I definitely love a study.
So of all these things that you are, Anita, what's the most comfortable? Like you alone writing to the laptop or you presenting to a room, copywriting for a brand, being in a glossy magazine, what feels like the most you?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I like all of them and I find all of them challenging as well for different reasons. But I think anything where I feel like I am really helping people or getting to the truth of something or being able to innovate, I think those are the things that really cut across everything I do. So if I feel like I'm making a change in a positive way, then I'm happy with it.
then the medium doesn't matter as long as the message is the... That's a good way to think about it, yeah. As I was reading your book and getting to know you, which is weird and one-sided because now you've put this all out in the world and I feel like I know you, I saw that you had the same experience I did, that you came up as like an assistant in a bitchy magazine. I don't know if... I don't even know what magazine it was, but like, that should be rude. Let me walk that back. At a glossy fashion magazine, but let's be honest, they were interesting places to work 15 years ago, 20 years ago.
Yeah, they really were.
Did you have ever like the Devil Wears Prada kind of vibes?
Yeah, definitely. I remember on my first internship, and I just graduated from doing a master's in journalism and gone to this like, you know, this very glossy office. And I was scared, but I was very polite and respectful and I was good at what I was doing. But I remember just, I mean, everyone in the office was white for a start and super, super posh and wealthy. And I obviously just stuck out in a sore thumb because I was wearing like vintage clothes. And like, I think I probably still had loads of piercings in my face then as well. I had this one incident that I actually write about in the book a little bit, but there was one day that it was raining and someone needed a package taken to another sort of building. And they could have sent a courier, you know, this company makes a lot of money, but they didn't. And basically this little group of fashion editors were like, send her because she needs the exercise, basically. And sort of like fat shamed me in this whole office.
That's like a macroaggression. That's not even a microaggression.
Yeah. It's so funny because when I look back at it, I literally did nothing. And I didn't even think of it as anything bad because I'd grown up in this culture of like so many, I think in particular, I guess, sort of millennial women, but obviously people who are different generations, but had grown up in this culture of like size zero. And it was very much in that era. And yeah, I just was like, that's how I deserve to be treated. Or like I almost expected it in some ways, which is really wild when I look back, because I guess as a journalist, I would never, ever treat someone like that. But also when someone behaves like that, that is entirely about them. And yeah, when I look back at it, I'm just like, wow, that is a lot.
But your book kind of dismantles a lot of the way we think about beauty and these things. And we're going to get into that in our news section. But for people who are like dropping in, I bet we have some new listeners who like don't even know who the hell I am. So they're here for you. We're going to chat a little bit more and then we're going to get into the news, which I usually do on our Wednesday podcasts and then raise wands. Okay, but before we get into that, and we will talk about the book and dig into some of what you just said, I'm curious, you now still write about beauty. You're in beauty journalism. What's your favorite part to write about? Is there like you love doing an acne story or hair color? Like, what's your thing?
Yeah, I think I've probably got a few. I do really like writing about fragrance because I think it's almost this great carte blanche to kind of almost write about anything and be able to link it to scent. So I do remember writing something about how certain smells kind of reminded me of my childhood in India. And
oh, you grew up in India?
No, I grew up in the UK, but I phrased that wrong. I spent my holidays in
In India. Visiting, yeah, and yeah, his family there too. Okay, I got it.
Yeah, I think fragrance can be an amazing sort of like lens to look at lots of different things. But I guess the thing I like writing about the most is just anything that feels like it hasn't been covered or is something that we all experience but maybe don't hear spoken about enough, or it's something we all feel but we don't see out and about, or we don't necessarily express it. So I think those are the things I like writing about. Anything that uses, I guess, beauty as a lens to look at different things in our lives, I think is my jam.
Are there any things right now, those type of stories that have just been sticking with you, like that are looking in a new way or be innovative or peeling back the curtain a little, that you've been writing about? Besides the book, obviously, you spent a lot of time on that.
Yeah, I think just probably the amount, I guess it's sticking with me probably in like a negative way, actually, but the amount of stories about beauty products being aimed at children, I think is really alarming. And like, I almost can't believe there's not a bigger outcry, to be honest, because it's so damaging and it's just capitalist greed. And I can't understand it. I can't understand why someone hasn't stepped in and like just been like, this should be illegal.
So it's been a huge story here in the US, obviously, with like the Sephora girls. I know the UK, they just opened Sephora there, so it's not Sephora. Yes, yeah. It only became a story, I think, because people were getting annoyed with them all shopping there. But the bigger story, obviously, being that they're using these products, right? I can't get enough of it. I'm fascinated.
Yeah. I mean, there's an aspect to it where children obviously want to mimic what the adults around them do. That is a total, that, you know, that is a behavior that children engage in. But I just think the fact that brands are sort of advertising to younger and younger and younger children is really, like, it's quite, it's really underhand and quite malevolent. And, like, I think this is the tricky thing. The beauty industry, there are good parts to it for sure, but there are these awful parts that are really these horrible capitalist machines. And, like, this is one of them. It's finding its next target audience because it's done with, I don't know, Gen Z, and it's like, okay, who's next? And yeah, I find that really hard. And I think there was a piece, I think it was in The Guardian in the UK, that was about how children, like really, really young children, are worried about anti-aging. And I was just like, oh my God, what a waste of a life. That's what it made me think. I was like, gosh, you have your entire lives in front of you, are literal little kids. You should not even be thinking about that. That shouldn't be on your radar. It just made me really sad. So I think that's the one that keeps coming back to me.
Yeah. It's not just the, I mean, we're all part of that machine, aren't we? In the same way we pick up what people are talking about, not just on TikTok, just like out in the world, telling little girls, oh, you're pretty instead of you're smart, that kind of vibe. Ugh. It's like, I'm glad we're talking about it. I want people to keep talking about it. But I know some people are like, wait, you two are beauty editors. You don't get to talk about it. You sell us this stuff. What do you say when people bring that back to you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a tricky line to sort of, I guess, traverse in a way. But I think being freelance now, I have a lot of control over what I write and what I recommend to people. And I guess if we were in an ideal world, maybe beauty products wouldn't exist. Maybe we would just all love the way we look and there would be nothing that we wanted to change about ourselves. That would be great. But that isn't the world we exist in. We do exist in a world where beauty products have, throughout centuries that have gone past, become part of our lives. And I think what we have to do, I guess, is be realistic within that. I enjoy using beauty products. What I guess I talk about and I hope that I advise people is to come at beauty from a place of joy and exploration and artistry, and just, it's almost like expressing what's on the inside on the outside. Because I think when we start to like mask and hide, I think it can really sort of affect how we feel about ourselves.
What gives you joy? I know you like a product, so tell
me. I do like a product, yeah. I mean, I really love packaging, which it's, might sound like quite a basic thing to say, but like I've got a very strong visual sense. So if something is really beautiful, I get a lot of joy from using it. For example, I'm trying to think of something now, but I love the smell of things, and it might not even be perfume. So I love the brand Rituel de Fee, and I love the smell of their lipsticks. Like in particular, they just smell kind of herby and witchy. And I'm always like, oh, that's nice. I like that. So I think it's finding the things that give you joy and getting that from them rather than getting the coverage, the anti-aging, the this, the that. Like it's the sensorial aspects. And it's that that I think we should try and focus on.
Oh my God, the more senses you can hit with a beauty product, the happier I am. I want the texture of the box to be nice. I want to smell it. It better look good. What sound? Oh yeah, sound. The click on a lipstick. I want them all involved. Did I miss anything? Texture, sight, sound, taste, if it's a lipstick. Five senses.
Yeah.
Rituel de Feel is really good. Is there anything else right now that you're loving that you just like, even if it's just the packaging? I just saw Zara's hairline and I was like, oh my God, this looks like sculptures.
Yeah, I have to say Zara's hair care line is so beautiful. It's really, really well done. It just gave me so much joy. I was like, these products just look amazing.
Oh, I haven't even tried the products yet, but I'm into them because they feel like, they look like an objet d'art that I want to just like stick on my shelf and be, and thrill me every day.
Yeah, I mean, the products are, I've tried most of the range and yeah, there's definitely some things I think.
See, everybody, she's a good journalist. Here I am giving my, my opinion when I haven't even tried it. Are I mean, Guido Palau did them. So like, I imagine they're good quality products, right?
Yeah, they're good. Yeah, definitely. But I just think if you can get joy from like holding something that, or like using something that you think is beautiful, I think that's a real added bonus to things and something we should definitely be looking for.
Yeah. I tease this at the top. We're doing this new project. So I have to ask you before we get into the news, is there any discontinued beauty product that you really miss that you would love to find again, the same thing?
Yeah, there is actually. So Bobbi Brown did these, they're sort of like little chubby pencils. And I think it was called like a retouching stick or something like that. But they are incredible. It's almost like a very chalky concealer. It's like the texture is in between a concealer and I guess like a, almost like, yeah, like a chalky eyeshadow pencil. They are incredible. And Yeah, I need to try and get on eBay and see if I can find some, actually, because it's going to run out.
You don't even have to listen to our next episode, because I think I know. In Jones Road Beauty, which is her new line, you know, when she left Estee Lauder and she started Jones Road, they just launched. And when you said chalky, I was like, oh, my God, I just used them and I wasn't sure how to use them. And I was like, this is a little chalky. Yeah, they're not called retouching sticks, but that literally is what they feel like. And you're meant to use them under your eyes, but you could still use concealer, but it kind of gives a little color correction. Is that what the product from Bobbi Brown was about?
Yeah, I think so. I have tried the Jones Road ones. They are fairly similar. They're a little bit more concealery. Whereas this one is quite chalky.
I'm wrong. But okay. I was like, I had to point you there just to see. Okay.
I know.
Because I tried them and I was like, I don't know if I'm good at using this yet because I couldn't really get, I had to moisturize and then I put it on. I was like, is it a concealer? Is it a reach? I don't know. I have to play around with it more. I'm not sure about it. But okay. So the Bobbi Brown thing, we're on it. We'll see if we can find something that's like that product for you. But let's go talk about the news. Does that sound good?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it.
Okay, it's my podcast, so I get to do this. There's lots of beauty news this week. Top item for me is that the paperback version of Anita Bhagwanda's book, Ugly, is coming out in the U.S. on April 9th. When do I get to have a news item and have the newsmaker right here in the studio with me? This is just a little bit my way of also just wanting to ask you a little bit more about your book now that I've read it. So we're going to chat about for that for a second. But one of the subtitles that is on your book, I know there's different covers for different countries, is Why the World Became Beauty Obsessed and How to Break Free. I read the whole book. I want clarity on what breaking free means to you.
So I think breaking free means reclaiming your own autonomy from beauty standards. I think that is what it really means. And being able to separate your self-esteem from your appearance, which is really hard because almost as soon as we're born, we're judged by our appearance. And I think women in particular are categorized by their appearance, and we sort of almost are conditioned to think that the most important thing about us is how we look. And it's almost being able to, through the journey of the book and through the research and through unpicking all the historic beauty standards, etc., it's being able to reclaim that and go, you know what, no, that isn't something that's wrong with me. I reject that. I'm going to celebrate that instead. And it's not an overnight thing. And this is something I'm really passionate about because I think there are so many books and so many Instagram feeds and so many people saying, just say a few affirmations and you'll fix everything. That is not how this thing works, because I have had an issue with the way I look since I was really young. I sort of have memories of being fat shamed when I was 4, and that feeling of being ugly is something I've had a really long time. That isn't going to disappear with an affirmation. It's absolutely not. It's not going to disappear with reading my book. I mean, I hope it might, but like it will start to ease. And I've had years and years of therapy, and it wasn't until I sort of unpicked beauty standards throughout history and sort of started to think about how they've been created that I was able to turn the corner on some of those things.
Yeah. I saw that you're using the hashtag reclaiming ugly, and it has levels to it. So I'm curious about this. Like, are you wanting to destigmatize the word ugly itself at all? Or is it that you want to stop the world from seeing things in that bifurcated way of like, this is beautiful, this is ugly?
I think it's mostly about reclaiming the fact that ugly as a concept doesn't actually exist, because it's so subjective and it was created for us. I think we sort of, because we're given these sets of beauty standards and we grow up with them, we see them all around us and we're told that we're ugly or beautiful or average or whatever it happens to be, that is the truth, this sort of like universal truth. And then also then science comes along and like adds some things into that with the golden ratio and all of that and blah, blah, blah. But ugly and beautiful and pretty, they're not absolutes, they're not truths, and we're told they are. And that is sort of what reclaiming ugly is to me.
Yeah. It's funny because language plays into that a bit. In fact, you mentioned that there's a lot of history in this book. I thought I knew a lot about this type of history, and you were uncovering little gems that I had never heard before. One of them being the root source of the word pretty. Like, it wasn't a concept. It actually meant mischievous, like the way that Shakespeare used it, right? Like a pretty little liar, a thief. You're deceiving people, right? Like, it's a deceptive word, pretty.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's really fascinating stuff around pretty privilege. And I think there's lots of stuff around people who are accused of crimes, etc. And if they're really attractive, it can go one of either ways. So it can be that they're sort of seen as being like cunning and manipulative and using their looks to their advantage, or they're believed because they're beautiful. And it's really interesting that that word pretty almost like correlates to that. I think it's really fascinating.
Yeah, I didn't know, because in my head, it's like always meant beautiful. But if you looked back, and as you show us in the book, nope, certainly did not mean that back in the day.
No.
Like, these history parts were some of my favorite. You called it a whistle stop tour. I'm curious, on this breezy whistle stop tour of beauty standards, aging standards, body standards, are there any anecdotes that stand out from history that you learned while researching the book that just have been stuck with you?
I mean, so much of it blew my mind. And I thought I knew a lot about beauty history because I am obsessed with old beauty products and collecting them and stuff like that. And I thought I knew a lot. But I think the things that really struck me were the way that the fear of older women was created and how that's still perpetuated. I thought that was really fascinating. And the links with beauty and class are things that we don't necessarily explore enough. And that links into race as well. But I always remember, and I think I mentioned this in the book, if not, it was in an earlier edit, but I find it fascinating that people in the Victorian era tried to look like they had tuberculosis because it was an upper class disease, and like would literally put things like arsenic in their eyes to look like they were sort of a bit watery eyed and like dying of tuberculosis. I'm like, wow, that is wild.
Yeah, because other researchers will tell you that beauty was equated with health and the flush of the cheeks, and that's all healthy. But this shows you that it is totally societally manipulated in that a desirable thing is actually deathly. But it looks good because the rich people have it.
Yeah, I do think it's really fascinating. Or I think there was a trend in medieval Britain as well with people plucking their hairlines back really, really far. And so having as much face as you could was the most beautiful way to be. And I think that's fascinating as well. Like, lots of these things are really interesting, but they do all come back quite often to trying to appeal to the male gaze and trying to get a wealthy husband and blah, blah, blah. And even, you know, the origins of cosmetics as well quite often come back to that, to trying to fit into a standard that is attractive. It's a tricky one. They're really fascinating, but also there's that double-edged sword.
But I think that by showing how fascinating they are, we're not saying they're good. I think it does show, like, they're ridiculous. They're based on nothing but one person's whims, or maybe like a trend that started nowhere and that they've just become so pervasive you don't question them. But I think by giving the history, you actually make us question them, which I think is your purpose, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I'm so questioning. I am curious, though, as I finished reading the book, you say that you've always felt on the outside of pretty looking in. And I was like, yeah, but she's very much in the beauty culture. So I'm curious, as now that you're like a grown-ass woman and you've done all this therapy, you wrote a whole book and you worked through this, do you feel that you own your power in this industry and you're part of it, like in a good way, in the beauty culture in a good way? Like, I have an influence, I can help women, I can make them feel good about themselves. Or do you still kind of feel like an interloper?
I think within the people I speak to, the people who like my work and who read my Substack, etc., and love the book, I feel like we have similar experiences. And people come up to me and say that all the time. All kinds of different people will say, oh, I felt like that. And lots of men as well, actually, which has been interesting. But I think within the industry, I still do have that sort of, I don't know, that slight feeling of not quite fitting in. I think as well in the UK, we have the whole class system to contend with as well. And magazines.
I think a lot of countries have that.
Yeah.
Americans like to say they don't, and that's BS.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess, yeah, from the outside, it doesn't look quite as prevalent as it is in the UK. And it's a really big part of our culture. And I don't think we talk about it. But yeah, I don't think I'll ever quite feel like I fit in. But actually, I think now I use that almost as a good thing. I'm kind of like, cool, that's fine. I don't need to be the most popular person in the room. I don't need to be the prettiest person in the room. I don't need that. I don't need to be those things. It's fine. I'm going to get what I need. You know, I'm going to go to this launch and do my job and get the information I need. And then I'm going to come home, and that's totally cool. So I'm definitely much more at peace with it on that side of things.
That's good. Okay. I know this is going to be like a whiplash, but so the book's out. That was the news item. The book is coming out. Everybody should go get it. I'm going to put the links, by the way, in the episode notes, so everybody has that. Maybe you'll even come back and talk to us again about it, but later. I need to move on to another news item that I thought you might have a take on, but here's what's happening. These Tarte influencer trips, remember that was like making news a couple months ago? Back in the news again. I just read an article in the New York Times, another one, I think it was in Business Insider, and they even talked to Maureen Kelly, who owns the brand, about these press influencer trips. You have to be on a rock not to know what we're talking about, but like they take you. How would you describe it, Anita? A press trip.
What, these press trips in particular or just generally?
Sure. I mean, I imagine you go on press trips, you write for Condé Nast Traveler. Like, you know, that's part of it, right?
Yeah, I do go on press trips. I wouldn't say I go on these kinds of press trips. So definitely NFI to those. I honestly cannot understand why brands do it, because I just don't think you would get the return on investment on those from like a really basic business model. You'd be much better off spending that money on advertising, or I don't know. I just think it's wild because it makes people so angry. That's not going to sell your product. I don't understand.
That's funny. The anger wasn't a part of it in the beginning. They would just be like, oh, cool, that rich, famous girl on TikTok is on that trip, and it was cool. But like you said, the anger is really coming into it. It happened with the first Tarte trip that was not inclusive enough. There wasn't a diverse group of people on the trip. And yet, rather than pull back on press trips, they sort of doubled down. And so Maureen Kelly says in this article, she says, quote, I find it so interesting that people don't get outraged when they see Super Bowl commercials or Times Square billboards for like beer or something like that. But they are outraged by these trips and the cost of them. And she said that a Tarte trip, quote, costs way less than the $7 million that some companies spent to reserve 30 seconds of time on the Super Bowl. So I think that what she's trying to say is that she thinks that people are angry because she spent the money on the trip. I feel like that might be missing the point a little. I don't know that people are mad that companies spend money on advertising and marketing. They know how it works. I think that it's benefiting a very small group might be the issue here.
Yeah, I think, you know, that is the issue, and that happens all the time. And it happens in these huge trips, but it also happens in the smaller ones, that it is a very narrow cross-section of people that are being taken on these trips and elevated. And they're already the people that have been elevated through the platforms because they look a certain way and because the tech is geared towards promoting people who look a certain way and et cetera. And I don't know, the whole thing feels really grim and yeah, it's not great. I just don't understand why it's a good use of money personally.
I say that too. And as I sit here listening to us, I'm like, yeah, the answer's staring us in the face because here we are talking about it. And isn't the old saying like, all press is good press, even bad press? And I don't know if this is bad press, but maybe if you didn't know what Tarte was, all of a sudden you're like, Tarte, what's that? Even if it comes wrapped in a negative vibe.
There is that. I just don't think it would make me buy a product. I don't know. Maybe it's good for brand awareness, but you're still associating your brand with negativity. I don't know.
Yeah. After studying marketing too, I was like, there's something to the just repetitive nature of hearing a brand name, even if I never wanted the product. Like even in my Instagram feed, I don't know. I just keep getting, I don't even know what sheer text is. I think it's like a pair of pantyhose or tights. Have you heard of those?
Yeah.
I don't need tights right now. I don't want tights right now. I literally find myself thinking about tights because every other thing I slide through, I see the name and it's just sort of permeated. So maybe that person then goes to the store and they're like, I need concealer. Tarte?
Yeah, maybe.
Shape Tape is a good concealer, but yeah, I don't know. So I don't think we're going to see the end of them, but it's interesting to me that the negative backlash to these press trips has become part of the story of the press trip. So yeah, I'll link to that stuff so people can see it. Anita, you're our guest co-host. Do you want to go to the science corner? It's what every guest co-host gets to do. Do you want to come to the science corner with me?
I absolutely do.
Okay, so this is a new study from the journal Cosmetic Dermatology. Exercising with makeup may not be great for your skin. So they did a study, and there were 43 people in it. So they wore foundation on some parts of their face and not others. And the parts where they had the foundation showed a greater increase in moisture levels. And you might think like, oh, cool. Is that a good thing? Well, no, because it's the makeup that shows is being prevented from evaporating off of the skin. So what that led to after was the size of the pores increased in the areas without makeup, but not as much in the skin sitting beneath the foundation, which indicates that the makeup actually blocks the pores, which is something I feel like we've heard about before, like as an urban legend, like this makeup, it's comedogenic, it's blocking pores. And then people tell us, no, it's not. It's definitely fine. But this is showing us right now, especially if you're wanting to be sweating and having your skin do its skin thing. If you have makeup on, it's not doing its skin thing.
This is a really interesting study because my first reaction to this was, I feel like that's a no-brainer. Did we need a study to tell us this?
Every time I go to Science Corner, whether it's Jess or whoever I bring, they're like, cool. So why did we study that?
I just think, I know it's not about this, but I just think, oh my God, there are so many better things you could be studying than this. I just, like, it feels like a slightly pointless study to me because I'm like, cool, okay. If you want to wear makeup in the gym for any reason, maybe you feel shy, maybe you don't like wearing makeup, no judgment, wear your makeup. Like who cares? I don't know. I sort of feel like these sort of pointless beauty studies that don't have any actual proper impact on like our health.
Okay, counterpoint, impact on our health. Let's say you're someone with debilitating acne. This has psychological effects, yeah. We know. You want to exercise, which has positive psychological effects. You don't feel comfortable exercising without cover-up makeup on. So you think, okay, this is good. But by putting the cover-up on, you are exacerbating the problem because you might be leading to more blocked pores, which could lead to more acne. Could that be a problem?
Could be, but I think anyone I know who's had acne, and I do know quite a lot of people,
Yeah. They
know that makeup makes their skin worse. I just think
Okay. They
know that. They know their skin. They know how their skin works.
Yeah.
And I think they probably know that. So I just feel like, oh, why are you telling us what we know? I don't know. What is the point of that study? How is it going to change our behavior? Are we now not going to wear makeup? We make sure we don't wear makeup to the gym. Right?
I mean, I'm sure that's the takeaway that I would write about if I still worked at glossy magazines. However, I was just thinking like, wait, there might be a negative outcome from this Science Corner in that people with acne are like, well, fine, I'm wearing my makeup and I'm not going to work out. So I won't go work out and sweat and get all the benefits you get from exercise because I don't want to take my makeup off, which let's hope that's not what happens.
I just think it's one of these examples where science is just like not doing anything to make anyone happier or better. I'm really into this kind of like pointless science. I don't think that helps anyone. Like really rather they would investigate something that could really help someone instead. That's my take.
No, we're going to go to the Journal of Cosmetic Dermatology and see what was going on there. I didn't actually poke into the funding of this one yet. Actually, I need to do that.
Yeah, I know. That's exactly what I thought. I wonder who's funded this.
Okay, I'm going to poke into it. And if I find something interesting, I'm going to jump back on the mic myself and add it in here. Good point. Thank you, Anita. It's been fun doing the news with you. You were an excellent co-host. Thank you.
My pleasure. It was fun.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Listen, there are so many skincare products on the market claiming to help reduce fine lines and wrinkles, and you know I will try most of them. But how do you know your products are actually working? Some research to back up the claims. That's why Jess and I are all about Ritual. They created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted a clinical study to take the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual's Hyacera is now a part of my skincare routine, and I got in the habit of taking it every day by putting the cute little purple jar right next to my sunscreen. It looks nice on my vanity, and let's be honest, I love that. But once I stuck with the habit, I really noticed a difference in my skin. I am not the only one. In a clinical study, taking Hyacera for 90 days led to a 3.6-time reduction in crow's feet wrinkles as compared to placebo. And it led to a 2.9 increase in skin smoothness. I also like that they're easy to swallow. The capsules sort of taste like vanilla. They're not all weird and fishy like some other supplements. Plus, Ritual is a certified B Corp, something we learned about on a recent episode. And all their supplements, including the Daily Protein and their Sleep Bio Series Melatonin supplement, are vegan, gluten-free, and made traceable. Do what Jess and I did. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/mascara. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/mascara for 25% off. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff. With real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Okay, it is time to raise a wand. Anita's going to raise some wands. But first, our guest co-host last week, Courtney, she was asking the fam for exfoliators. She wanted body exfoliators. We have a beauty editor here with a whole vast breadth of knowledge that I don't have. What would you suggest for body exfoliation?
So my favorite, I have to say, is the Ameliorate Mitten. I think they're a UK brand, but I'm fairly sure they're sold globally. But it's just this amazing sort of shower mitt, and it does the job better, I think, of any body scrub. I know there is that lovely feeling when you use a body scrub of like all the particles and blah. I totally get that. But I think for ease of use, I just find this really helpful. A lot of that range is designed for people with keratosis pilaris, which is sort of like the little sort of chicken, I think they sort of like call it like chicken skin.
Uh-huh.
Which I've never quite understood. But yeah, you know, just that sort of slightly bumpy skin thing. And I do have that, and I've got really dry skin and it really helps me. So I'm a big fan.
I love scrubby gloves too. And I also think if we're trying to be sustainable, your mitt that you suggested is great because then you don't have to buy a separate exfoliator. You just use your regular whatever, you use soap, body wash, oil, et cetera, with the mitt. What do you use with the mitt? Your soap?
Yeah, I just use like a fragrance-free sort of shower gel.
Yeah, and get the job done. That's a good one. This is new. And then I was like, why do we need this product? And then I was like, this product is great. don't you love when that happens? You're like, I'm always such a hater until I'm not a hater. And then I'm like proselytizing to everyone. But Odele is a brand I really like because it's, I think this is mostly in Target and it is in the States. I don't know if you guys have it
yet. No, we don't.
But they're gender neutral, no synthetic fragrances. They do hair care, but really good prices. Like that Target, you feel like elevated, but it's not the elevated prices. So they did a scalp and body scrub. Have you ever used a scalp scrub?
Yeah, I have.
They confuse me because I'm always like, why do I want nubby bits in my hair? I don't know. But here's why this is genius. So you could use it either place. So if you're into scalp scrubs, use it as your scalp scrub. But as a body scrub, I think a lot of the sugar-based and salt-based body scrubs leave an oil residue behind because I guess some people, you know, it'll be like moisturizing, but then I hate when your whole bathtub is all slippery now or there's like a little puddle of oil on the top of it. I think because this is also formulated for scalp, it does not leave an oily finish. It somehow leaves you moisturized and exfoliated, obviously, because it has like the exfoliating sugar in it, but without any sort of oily finish. On top of that, I like a scent, but this is 100% natural scent. So they use a fragrance, but it's a not synthetic fragrance. So that is technically going to be less allergen causing or less allergies for people. So it's a natural fragrance too. Also, it's $16. It's a big old tub. So that'd be my recommendation. Okay, Anita, so you get to share your favorite products, but also I'm wondering, is there something that we can help you find?
I guess I'm always on the lookout for really beautiful things because I get a lot of joy from like beautiful products. And this is really geeky. This is something I do myself. So I like decant. I mean, I'm not doing this at the moment because I'm really busy. But for a while, I was decanting beauty products into vintage kind of like pill boxes and stuff like that. So when I opened my makeup bag, it was all looked like treasure and it filled me with so much joy. So I would be interested to know if there are any beauty products out there that, I don't know, are kind of similar. They sort of feel like jewelry or like joy or like amazing treasure. If there's something that you're like, oh my God, that's so beautiful. I love using it. Anything like that is very much up my street.
Oh, I have follow-up questions. What were you decanting into? Are we talking like ceramic, gold, metal, vintage what? Like,
So they're little vintage pill boxes. So they're almost like compartmentalized.
Oh, okay. Like metal.
Yeah, they're metal. Yeah. So they're really beautiful and ornate. You can get lots of different kinds. And I would clean them and sterilize them and then sort of like find a way to get the product into the little pill boxes. And I just loved, like, it sort of felt like this amazing vintage ritual putting these products on. I loved it.
Yeah.
It felt like actual magic. I loved it.
What does one search for on like eBay? Vintage pill boxes?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so cool. That's a good one. But we want to get you maybe something that makes it a little easier because you're a busy woman. Yeah. So if you guys have ideas for Anita, call us 646. Call us in the United States. Plus one area code. Or WhatsApp me or whatever. 646-481-8182. Or it's even easier. And frankly, it sounds better if you make a little voice memo and email it to us at info@fatmascara.com. Okay, time to raise some wands for ourselves. First up, I want to know, because I love to hear about this. Do you have a favorite candle?
Yes, I do. So my favorite candle, I've got two actually, if I'm allowed to.
I'll allow it.
Thank you. One of my favorites is by a brand called Mama Moon, which is available in the US, I think. And the person that runs it is an eclectic witch, and she's based in London. And she makes these incredible candles. Honestly, they smell like nothing else. They are my favorite. If someone was like, you have to pick a candle to have for the rest of your life, it would be a Mama Moon candle. They're so good. And I just feel like they've got magic in them as well. I'm like, that is a bonus.
Jess would love this. Wait, when you said she's an eclectic witch, is that like a religion? Is she like a Wiccan or something? Or is that just an honorific for a cool lady?
No, she is a practicing witch. I don't know if she identifies as Wiccan in terms of the religion, but she's definitely a practicing witch in London. Cool. And she makes lots of great products, but the candles are incredible. Yeah. And I guess the other candle I really like is Jo Malone London's Pomegranate Noir, which I know is like quite different, but what can I say?
Like the high street posh. I know, the witchy witch.
No, I love it.
That it's is me.
Yeah, it's the two sides of your personality. I was just going to say coming out. Why Pomegranate Noir? What's that scent about for you?
I just really love that scent. I think it's one of the original Jo Malone London ones that I just think it's incredible. It's sort of just, it's basically always winter or autumn in the UK. And for me, you sort of need something that goes with that. And I think that candle really suits those moods and that sort of those temperatures. So yeah, I just love the smell of it. I think it's beautiful.
Oh, it's a good one. Is there just another razor wand from you? Is there any new beauty product that you're really into that's just come out?
So there is a product that I really, really love, and I've just discovered it and seen that it's sold out in some places as well, but it's the Erin Rose Lip Conditioner. And yeah, I think I was quite surprised. Not that I expected it to not be as good as it is, but I just was like, this is a lip balm, right? It's going to be nice, cool, whatever. It's the most long-lasting lip balm I've ever worn. And I think it's better than any of the lip masks as well that I've tried.
Okay.
And it smells amazing. I'm a very big fan. And it looks really beautiful on the lips.
And is this in like tube? Is it like a stick form? Is it a jar? What describe, please.
It's like a little pink tube.
Okay. And so it's more like a jelly balm that comes out of it.
Yeah, it's quite thick. It just really lasts. You can almost, if you put it on before bed, you can sort of feel it the morning after, which is amazing.
And they're not marketing it as like a lip mask, but it's as good as one of those kind of things.
It's like one of those under the radar amazing things that I've heard a couple of people have said to me, oh my God, that's amazing. And I'm like, yeah, I know. It's great.
Cult favorite in the making. I like that. Okay, that's a good one. All right, last razor wand from you. Anything else? It could be anything in the world. You have any other razor wands for us?
Yeah, I definitely do. I have just rediscovered MAC's Chestnut Lip Liner, which I know is a classic. And obviously MAC have sort of relaunched all of their MAC lipsticks and stuff. But the Chestnut Lip Liner, I think, is particularly great just because I mean, this is interesting because I don't think I realized I was doing this, but I was using really light lip liners because I think a part of me was like, no, why would I use... I think because when you've got dark lips, you've always been conditioned to want to lighten them. And then I put that Chestnut Lip Liner on and I was like, no, this is the actual color of my lips. My lips are like dark pink and brown. And I was just like, this is why this looks great, because it's actually meant for my skin tone. And it was like a real moment of where, like, oh my God, I thought I had really decolonized my beauty routine, and I hadn't. And yeah, so I bought two of them in the MAC store the other day. I was like, this is great. I'm going to go back to this. This is good.
It's a classic. Yeah. Is that what you're wearing right now?
No, this is a Rituel de Fille lipstick. I think it's called Carnal, which is another one actually that's really good if you've got dark lips. It's like a very dark browny rose color.
It almost seems like it would be a nude, which is a dumb term because nude is different for everyone, but it feels like it's your nude in a way.
It is actually, yeah. I think that's why I love it so much.
It's lovely. Also, maybe together. You could do the chestnut and the carnal.
Absolutely, yeah.
This is funny how these are like, these guest co-hosts are like bleeding into each other, but I had on Courtney Shields last week and she's the founder of Dibs Beauty. And she tried to get me into this thing called a blush topper. And I don't know if this is a recurring theme here. Like, I'm not going to like it until I'm like obsessed with it. Because I was like, why do I need double blush, right? So she makes a cream blush, but now she has this like baked powder blush. She calls a blush topper. And my thing is that blush gets eaten. My face just eats blush. I put it on and then like an hour later, it's like, where did it go? So the blush topper, sorry, I'm looking for it, is not meant to be worn alone, though I guess that you could. And you set your cream blush with a colored highlighty blush powder. And I was like, oh, is it just going to be shimmery blush? Anita, no. It's like a whole other thing. It's like a highlight, but I have it on right now and it just is making the blush last longer and also gives it like a little light reflection kind of vibe, but not too shimmery, if that makes sense.
Interesting. I'm definitely interested by that because I use cream blush and then put powder blush on top to set it.
Oh, you do this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I, like my face eats blush as well.
But you're just using a regular blush on top of the cream blush. I think is the makeup artist tip that we've heard. So I was like, oh, aren't these just regular blushes? But because they have that light reflecting quality and there's something setting powder-ish about them, they really work. So I'm going to raise a wand to the Dibs Duet Baked Blush Duo. And that's my story. And now you especially can go get your beauty sleep because it's later there and it's almost time. Everybody else can get their beauty sleep and we'll see you on Friday. Thanks for coming on the show, Anita.
Thank you for having me. It's been so fun.
We hope you enjoyed the show. It's your reviews and feedback that help us make the podcast even better. Head over to iTunes to rate and review us or email your thoughts to info@fatmascara.com.
We also want to answer your beauty questions and hear what products you love. To share a Raise a Wand product review or to ask a beauty question, email us at info@fatmascara.
If you send it as a voice memo file, we can even share your voice on the podcast. You can also do that by leaving us a voice message. Our phone number in the United States is 646-481-8182.
Thanks so much for listening.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.